In the developing story that began with 1953 with Crick and Watson and so on, you move forward to the late 60s where Francis Crick and Leslie Orgel, both at the Salk Institute, and Carl Woese, are coming up with a notion of possibly some kind of a substance that could, a dual-purpose type of molecule that could actually function as an enzyme and also replicate without the existence of DNA. What would that possibly be? And they said, well, possibly it's RNA. 15 years later, independently, experiments were done by Tom Cech and Sidney Altman, who's next to speak, and they created what we would now call RNA World. Sid is Origins Project Distinguished Visiting Professor here at ASU, Sterling Professor of Molecular, Cellular and Developmental Biology at Yale, and he will now tell us about RNA World, I suspect.
After Lawrence spoke his introduction, I thought I might as well leave. He said more or less many of the things that I would want to say in any case. But looking around here and seeing the tremendous number of people, I felt there's something else I want to say before I talked about the RNA world, which I will indeed talk about. And what I want to say is the following. Those of us at this table who have done research in the United States and have been supported by the federal government in one way or another, we are very, very grateful to you. I myself think that about 3 cents from every taxpayer every year paid for my research. And I have to say with all sincerity that any of you who pay taxes, thank you very much. I'm very happy for your support. Now, Francis Crick in the late 50s enunciated what he said was the central dogma of molecular biology at that time, and it had to do with the transfer of information inside cells. He said, you have DNA, and DNA is made up of subunits, and there are things called bases on them, the 4 different bases in the various subunits, and the sequence of those bases contain our genetic information, essentially, and that's very important. And the next step was transfer of that information to RNA. RNA is chemically a little different from DNA, but the sequence of bases has to be identical to that in DNA. If you make a segment of RNA from DNA, that segment must contain the same information as the DNA from which it was copied. I'm not going to talk about other variations on the genetic code right now. Then RNA inside cells goes to a subcellular machinery called the ribosome, which is made up of RNA and protein. And many more proteins are made from the RNA, messenger RNA, that comes to it. And that's how information gets transferred. However, you can't go any further because although you can assign some aspects of information to proteins, proteins are incapable of reproducing the information in them. So you can have DNA with information, RNA with information, going to protein, and that's as far as you can go. In the world, which everyone knew at that time, all those steps are controlled by various proteins in forms of different enzymes. Now, in 1982 and 83, it was discovered that RNA could be a catalyst. It had been thought that RNA only carried information from one place to another inside the cell, and that's essentially all it did. But when it was discovered that RNA could be a catalyst, our ideas changed enormously about how we thought about life. In fact, Crick and Leslie Orgel published back-to-back papers in 67 or 68, and Carl Woese wrote a book which contained pieces about evolution. And all three of these people indicated that if you took Crick's classical central dogma, it was impossible to think about how life started, because we know that you didn't have proteins with specified sequence before you had DNA and RNA with sequence. So if you didn't have any proteins, there's no way that the information in DNA and RNA could be propagated. But when it was discovered that RNA could be a catalyst or an enzyme in terms of biological terms, everything changed. And as scientists frequently do, you have one example of one function in a particular class, and you say immediately, oh, we have one function, therefore this molecule can do everything that we think of. And the notion of how life originated changed dramatically, because now RNA had information, could carry out biochemical catalysis, and presumably then could do everything that a cell needs for survival, and therefore life could proceed. And at some point, Wally Gilbert at Harvard indicated that DNA was not important in this particular world because you want to have the simplest explanation you can. And so he labeled what was left as the RNA world. To me, it is unclear whether or not DNA existed at that time or not, but it's actually unimportant for what we're going to discuss. Several people took it upon themselves to prove that RNA could in fact have many enzymatic functions, and Larry Gold at the University of Colorado developed a very clever method, and in fact many people over the next few years showed that RNA, pieces of RNA, could have at least 20 or 25 essential enzymatic functions that exist inside cells. So, at least synthetically, in a test tube, one could show that different pieces of RNA had about 25 different enzymatic functions, and if you worked hard enough, you could probably add many more functions to that list. However, only one of those functions really exists today, and it was the original one that was found independently in two labs. That is the ability of RNA to cut either itself, long piece of RNA, or other pieces of RNA. All the other functions that I mentioned do not exist in nature today. And you can ask yourself why, and one reason could be that we don't have that huge collection of RNA molecules to test for different functions, or secondly, nature did not have enough time to test out many different functions. But the fact is, thirdly, there is another possible reason. Evolution has shown that all these other functions could be performed better by proteins. I should have mentioned that originally, and therefore that was a more adaptable solution than having RNA carried out all these functions. So all those functions lost favor. Now, the question is, when did this all occur, and what meaning does the RNA world have with respect to life itself? From what I heard today, it must have occurred later than 3.5 billion years ago, and might have taken 700 or 800 million years from the time the Earth was shaped as it is now, with reasonable oceans and reasonable skies, and by that I mean chemical processes in the oceans and the skies, we could think about in a reasonable fashion. So 3.5 billion years at least, the RNA world must have existed for some time before that. Now, one can ask oneself, are you going to do experiments to test whether or not this is possible? What kinds of experiments are you going to do? And there are people doing experiments of one kind or another to show that primitive cells might have existed, or different arrangements of RNA possibly in primitive cells might have also existed. And you can ask yourself, What is the point of doing that? How are you going to know if what you learn now has any relevance to what happened 3.8 million years ago, billion years ago? And it's not clear that it does have relevance or importance. But the fact is, we will probably learn something about the RNA world from doing these experiments. And furthermore, we are problem solvers. Any problem we have, and it doesn't matter whether it's in science or economics or something else, we'll work on it because we like solving problems. That's our nature. Larry mentioned the idea that was brought up by Crick and Orgel some time ago when they had been thinking about all these problems, and they knew about RNA catalysis and metabolism, and they sort of threw up their hands in the air and they said, well, we don't really know how life started on Earth. We don't know what happened before this situation of the RNA world, so we can say that life started somewhere else. But the kind of life they were thinking of had to be something that we recognize in terms of our description of life and how it works as we recognize it. You can also ask, okay, there's an RNA world on Earth. Where did it start? What's going on? Well, I feel these questions are groundless. There's no point in asking those questions. We don't know what different pockets of the Earth look like. That is to say, their geology, temperature, chemical composition, things like that. We can make reasonable guesses about that, but there's just no point in asking about where it happened or what planet it might have happened on or what meteor it might have happened on. I just don't think those questions are relevant at this particular time. And it doesn't matter. It's not important to find out where life started geographically at any particular time. The most important thing is to understand the chemistry and how the prebiotic chemistry enabled us to make RNA of the size we know about. And another thing about RNA is that it is a single strand, whereas DNA is a double strand. I don't want to go into that, except DNA is a double helix in which the helices are bound around each other like this. But RNA is just one strand in solution. And because it is one strand in solution, it can adopt many, many conformations. And some of those are, in fact, catalytic. So all those reasons give me some confidence that the RNA world did exist at one time. And I don't know if it was the original life form or some derivatives of RNA were involved in that, or how long the RNA world. But the RNA world existed, but I'm fairly confident it did exist. I think that, to me, is a very reasonable explanation or hypothesis about the origin of life on Earth as we know it. Thank you.